I'm not sure there's ever been a television show that's gotten so much attention from kids, parents, teachers, and counselors as the recently released Netflix series 13 Reasons Why. The show has sparked conversations about all sorts of adolescent issues, including suicide. But the show has also ignited controversy as experts are divided over whether or not 13 Reasons Why is motivating teenagers toward positive or negative behaviors. One thing is for sure, this is not a show to ignore. Our kids are watching it. They are thinking and talking about it, and they are allowing 13 Reasons Why to shape their lives. That's why we're talking about the importance of 13 Reasons Why and how to respond on this episode of Youth Culture Matters.
From the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, this is Youth Culture Matters. If you're a parent, youth worker, educator, counselor, grandparent, or anyone else who cares about kids, we're glad you've joined us for this practical, informative, and hope-filled podcast. This is a place where together we talk and think Christianly about the rapidly changing world of today's children, teens, and young adults.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Youth Culture Matters. I'm Walt Mueller here at the Center for Parent Youth Understanding. And as always, Jason Sochenek is joining us from beautiful Spokane, Washington. Jason, welcome.
Thank you. I don't know if those that live in Spokane would say it's beautiful right now. It's been raining, and we just recently finished our last snow. So I don't know. I enjoy it, but I don't know if the rest of Spokane is enjoying it.
Well, it's like that here, too, although we haven't had snow for quite some time, so a little bit rainy. We're going to talk about a dreary subject today, and we're going to jump right into it. We're going to forego all the usual banter because we think that there's an issue out there that needs some serious attention, and a lot of the attention that's being given to it now has been prompted by, I think it's now the most watched Netflix series of all time, and that's 13 Reasons Why. So, Jason, you've watched it, right? Start to finish?
I have.
Yeah.
All the episodes. And I'm surprised. I shouldn't be surprised, but that blows me away that it's already the most watched Netflix series, having only been on for such a short period of time.
Right, the end of March, and just a little over a month right now at the time that we're recording this. And I would have thought, you know, having watched Stranger Things, did you watch that as well on Netflix?
I did.
Which was a great...
Yeah.
A great series and got a lot of traction with kids and adults as well. I would have thought that Stranger Things would have been up at the top, but this particular series, which is 13 episodes and it's called 13 Reasons Why, has really stuck with kids and with adults. It's getting a lot of attention all over the news outlets, in communities and schools. Parents are concerned about it. Students are talking about it. It's just a hot thing, and it's based on a novel that was written, a young adult novel that made it to the top of the best-selling list back in 2007 by Jay Asher. The novel was the same title, 13 Reasons Why, and it is about a high school junior named Hannah Baker. She's the main character in the book, who commits suicide, and before she takes her own life, she records 13 tapes, each one with a message to a person who she says played a role in her suicide. The series is rated MA for mature audiences, which means when you look at the MA rating, it means it may be unsuitable for children under 17. But from what we're hearing, and we've talked to youth workers, we've talked to the folks that we're having on today, this middle school kids are just devouring this thing and talking about it, and perhaps even younger, I don't know. But just at the level of middle school, you know, that's a big thing. When the series was made, now 10 years later after the book, the producers and Selena Gomez she led the charge to make this thing as a producer. She said the purpose was to basically start a dialogue about bullying and suicide, and that I think it has done. But those dialogues, the conversations are filled some with praise, some with pushback. Some people are very, very concerned that this might serve as a trigger for kids. And in fact, there's some stories coming out that people are saying it has. We may talk about that. It is extremely graphic, and we're going to talk about whether what it does is pull back the curtain on high school life and show us things in a truthful way, or is it more gratuitous? Is it inflated? Is it accurate? Is it inaccurate? But we want to talk finally after that just about how we can use this and what we can learn from it in positive ways. So, Jason, before we introduce who's coming on, I just want to read you a couple of things. We asked youth workers if they had any questions today or any comments about the conversation we're going to have on the podcast. And one of our friends, Josh Good, posted on Facebook when we asked for this, he said, "Awesome. In talking with teens in my youth group and at the high school where I substitute, they all agree the show is an incredibly accurate portrayal of high school culture and what they face on a daily basis. Also, clearly missing in the show is the hope of the gospel." And so we'll talk about that as well. I made a list, Jason. I don't know if you did this, but I just sat down after it was over, and I watched the 13th episode. I just took a piece of paper and a pen, and I started to jot all the issues I could remember that came up. So let me rifle through this. We may hit on some, certainly we'll hit on a few of these that are the bigger issues. But just so parents and youth workers who are listening, maybe if they haven't watched it, here's the kinds of things that Josh Good says his students are seeing and hearing. They're saying, yeah, this is my life in high school. So here's a list. High school drama, all the drama of high school. The question about truth, what is truth? Is truth out there? You know, what is right, what is wrong? Appearance pressure and expectations, academic pressure and resume building, the athletic pressure that exists and the worship of athletics in our culture and on our campuses, a lot on social media. So much happens, as is to be expected, and something that's been made these days about high schoolers on social media. The kids are always on. And I was thinking about the book I read by Donna Freitas, The Happiness Effect, where she says appearing happy takes precedence over being happy. And I would say that's a big part of the show as well. Some more things. Sexuality, same-sex attraction, sexting, objectification of the body, sexual assault, rape, revenge, anxiety, fear, depression, cutting, self-injury, peer pressure, substance abuse and addiction, entitlement, broken families, bullying, cyberbullying, which was front and center in this whole thing, violence, narcissism, and then the last thing I listed, of course, is suicide. So that's what the show is about.
Yeah. And, there are some – I think that's a well-compiled list. Some of the other ones I did think about was the topics of love, the idea of isolation, which also then brings in the idea of parents and what do the role of parents have in the lives of these teens, even in the homes that aren't broken. And then the other thing, too, I thought a lot about was just the overcommitment that school administrators have, the number of tasks and responsibilities that are forced upon them as the home begins to break down. I just really I thought the series started with one counselor. It went to two, and I even wonder if those are the only two counselors in this school, there's a lot that's being missed because schools are needing more and more counselors. And so I just thought about the overcommitment of not only school administrators, but even teachers as they're being asked to do more with more students.
Yeah. Well, we've got two people who are joining us, and these are folks we've had on the podcast before. They're friends of ours. Kara Twining is a high school guidance counselor in Spokane, Washington. Amy Flavin is a counselor as well on associate staff here at CPYU, and she, along with her husband Mike, are working with high schoolers and middle schoolers in the New York City bedroom community of New Providence, New Jersey. So welcome to both of you. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity to talk about this.
Well, I'm glad you're here because, you know, you guys deal with this stuff on a daily basis. You see the fallout. You're working to get to the root issues that are there. And let me start with a question to Kara. And, you know, Kara, you've watched this, and I think you both have read the book. I have not read the book. Jason, have you read the book?
I have not.
I haven't read the book either, but I know you both read the book. Is that list and our friend Josh's comment about this is what is happening on the high school campus now, in your estimation, is that accurate by what you're seeing? Kara, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I think one of the most unnerving things about the series and the book is that for an adult, is that those things, they are happening. I think they're it's a magnified reality. I mean, there's nothing good in the series. I didn't see anything good about high school or anything good about being a teenager. So it's magnified on the negatives. But if you were to ask any teenager in my building if these kind of things happen, they're going to tell you that they do. Hmm.
Would you say, you know, and I know it's drama, and I think people need to remember that it's drama, and so everything will be, you know, concentrated. I wonder if, let me ask this, because you say when it's magnified, you know, there were certain characters who were central to the show, a central core group of characters. Then there were a lot of other students who just were walking the hallways, sitting in the cafeteria, you know, in the stands at the basketball games or whatever. Do you think it was magnified because they were focusing on one group of students, that this is really what their lives were like? Or was it everybody's like this? Or is there a subgroup like this in every school where these things are actually more magnified than they would be, you know, or more intense for them than they would be for others?
Well, I felt like having read the book first, I felt like the series really took advantage of the typical things that are going to draw a teenager to a show, which you see in One Tree Hill or, you know, other TV shows like that the teenagers watch. You're going to have your stereotypical jocks. You're going to have your people on the fringe. You're going to have the jerks. And the book, to me, when I don't know, Amy might have a comment on this too. I didn't feel like the book did that, took those characters and blew them up in front of you like they did on the series. I think that was to draw in viewers, because that's the expectation of teenage viewers, are these certain characters and certain ways that they act, expectations from them.
Yeah.
I would agree with that. And I think that word magnified is very accurate, because they just, it's almost like everything else faded into the background. And as you look at that, what was portrayed, there was pretty much nothing positive that was portrayed about high school life, high school interactions. Clay definitely had some virtuous qualities, but it just, everything else was really a constant flow of lies and deceit and unable to trust one another and poor friendships and using of each other and using of people, and just a constant flow along that side of things.
Yeah, and that... So let me ask this question, because when we talk about music and media here, we always say that it's both a map and a mirror. So for those of us who are older, something like 13 Reasons Why can serve as a mirror. Kids are looking into it. We look over their shoulder, and it reflects back to us the kinds of things that are issues in their world. And I hear exactly what you're saying and would agree, but I also know that these things all exist, maybe not in the magnified way that the show made them. So in that respect, it gives us a good window into, hey, here are the kinds of things kids are juggling. But at the same time, we say that culture is a map. And that may be one of the biggest concerns about this, because, you know, I'm thinking of middle schoolers. They're looking at this as a lens into high school life. And if they walk away from it saying, oh, okay, that's what it is, then expectations are raised, and they may actually even assume some of those roles as they step into high school. And what's being portrayed as fiction then will be understood as and embraced as and lived out as reality. Have you seen that happen, or do you share that concern?
I actually have a 14-year-old daughter who's an eighth grader who got through this series before I got to it. And had this conversation last night. I said, what are your friends saying? And she said, she goes, some people think that's how high school is. And she's like, and I told them, you know, it's just your choices you make. That doesn't have to be your high school. It doesn't have to be your experience. So it was an interesting conversation as you say that yeah, these shows are, you know, like for me, it was, I'm a little older than this, but like 90210, you know, that was what we thought high school was. And these shows that our middle schoolers are watching are definitely going to make them think that that's the way high school will be bent, you know? Hmm. So I do think that's real. But then high schoolers hate it. They hate everybody who's in it. They think all the characters are stupid. And yeah, those things happen, but why would he be so stupid? And why would she act like that? And they get kind of bothered by the characters in it.
Hmm. Are those conversations with older high school students or younger high school students, or do you think it makes a difference once you hit that mid-adolescent age range?
I don't know. I work, my caseload right now is freshmen, but I talk to freshmen, sophomores, and some juniors about the show, and that was kind of the overall reaction. Like, you know, they were more mad at the way that the show went. Not in a, you know, not in a way that we are, more in a way like that she was dumb and she should have done this and that was a stupid character and why would he, you know, more like that, more judging and criticizing the characters.
Interesting to me hearing about high school, just being in the presence of the students. Are they devouring it just like the middle schoolers but seeing it differently? Or yes. Or are they not just watching it as much as some of the middle schoolers are?
Well, I mean, my middle school experience on this is somewhat limited just because it's from my daughter's perspective. But as far as being in the high school, I do think it's different. I feel, I don't know, it's oddly, I think middle schoolers are more emotionally attached to it. My daughter says this is a conversation every day since they've all watched it, talking about things about the show. And wow. Some of it is, you know, the almost to me, the rape scene was, you know, soft porn. And they're talking about that. They're talking about the actual, you know, method of killing yourself that was, I felt, taught on that show. And they're, you know, really being pulled into it. Where the high schoolers, unfortunately, I think have been desensitized to this. And they've seen worse. And so they watch it and go, oh, it was cheesy. It was stupid. And at that, by the time they are in high school, unfortunately, these things aren't shocking and a conversation anymore.
Yeah. Amy, what's been your experience with that?
Well, that's interesting. I actually just had a conversation yesterday with some of my college-age students, and they're typical college-age, 18 to 22-ish, about it. Just asked them how many of them had heard about it or seen it or viewed it or whatever. And I had a couple that had viewed it and they really did not like it. And they didn't like it from the standpoint of the suicide was sort of presented as the only option when a person gets to the end of hope or the end of something. And then one of the other young women spoke up and said she has a younger sibling who has watched it. And she was very angry about it because of what she felt it was teaching high school students or adolescents. Her sibling was on the younger adolescent side, but she had a very interesting emotional reaction to that, that it made her very angry, that kids were watching this and they would be influenced by it and it might make them discouraged, or in fact, this as a model.
Have those conversations prompted? So they're talking about it a little bit differently, but what I'm also curious about is specifically at the high school level, maybe even college level, if it's prompted action on things that they've known about or conversation about things that they've heard about. So maybe this has prompted them being more honest about things that they're hearing in the hallways or they know that has happened. I'm just curious if it's done anything in the positive that's brought things that might have been secret before into the light.
I haven't seen any changes here at all.
I've actually felt a little bit more like their reaction is actually a little more on the judgmental side of the individual characters, of what the individual, and I, one of my primary thoughts as I was watching this, definitely different than when I read the book, because I read the book a number of years ago, but one of my number one concerns was who are they identifying with as they are watching this? And which of the characters, what role do they see themselves having? And I had a lot of questions about that. Like what role do you play? Are you Hannah? Are you Clay? Are you, you know, one of the others that is out for survival? Are you Courtney? And I think that is part of how they are watching it.
That's actually a good thought there, because one of the directions we want to go with this before we're done is we want to talk about, look, it's out there, kids are watching it, how can we use it, how can we process it in helpful ways? And as I said before, you know, well, for example, musical taste or media taste, that gives us clues into the kinds of issues kids are dealing with, and they can almost be used as, you know, a way to get at the heart of a young person to see what they perceive their issues to be. So that question you asked, Amy, about, you know, who do you identify with, might be a great question for a youth worker or a mom and a dad to ask to a child, to a student, to a group of students, to get a sense of what some of the issues are that they're dealing with. And, yeah, I just think that's a great question. I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that. Let me do this. Let's take a break. And I've got some thoughts. You guys have said some things that have really prompted. I've been taking notes like crazy. Lots of prompted thoughts here. When we come back from the break, we're going to continue this conversation about 13 reasons why, what we can learn from it, how to process it, what we should think of it, and then how we can use it as we minister to the kids that we know and love. Stick with us. We'll be right back. In an effort to help you help the kids you know and love navigate their emerging sexuality to the glory of God, we've launched a sexual integrity initiative here at CPYU. Thanks to a generous grant from a company called DAS, you can access our Sexual Integrity Initiative and a growing number of resources for free by visiting the website at sexualintegrityinitiative.com. Well, welcome back, everybody, to this episode of Youth Culture Matters. We're talking with, as we do on every episode, Jason Sochenik. And then we've brought in today Kara Twining and Amy Flavin, counselors who are friends and have been on here before to talk about the Netflix series 13 Reasons Why, which is highly popular, being talked about a lot right now, and deserves a lot of attention. One of the things that was interesting in our conversation before we took the break was the difference between middle schoolers and high schoolers and how they're watching it. I had a thought, because I just wrote something on this today, age aspiration, which marketers know about, where, you know, a 13-year-old, a 14-year-old doesn't want to be seen, perceived, treated like, feel like they're 13 or 14. They want to be seen, perceived, treated like, feel like they're 16, 17, 18 years old. And marketers are aware of this. And I think that's probably playing into how students are attracted to this and why middle schoolers are really aspiring up. And that leaves me with some fear about whether or not they're going to believe that this is actually what high school is like and the kind of behavior that's expected. But, Kara, you said that your daughter, who I think you said 14?
Yes.
She said 14. Now, you read the book, and then you found out she was watching it, and then you went and watched it. My question was, were you aware when she was watching it that she was watching it? Because I think this is an issue for most parents. We just don't know.
Yeah, so I had read the book, and I was actually excited to see there was a series because I thought the book was excellent. And when the series came out, I told my daughter I'd watch it with her. We watched the first one together and part of the second. I was a little iffy on it, and then days went by. And the next thing I know, she had blown through the whole thing because her friends at school were watching it, and she had watched the whole series. And then I was warned that she shouldn't at the end. And we had a conversation. And from there, you know, I finished the series myself and sat down and we talked about it. But I, as a parent, it was after I had seen the series myself, I was very upset, even sick to my stomach, that my 14-year-old had watched that without me.
And that again, goes to, there's a couple things at work there. One is our kids will do what they want to do. And even if we say no, or which you didn't in this case because you weren't aware, but for parents who say no or parents who put blocks or filters, I mean, there are numerous ways for kids to go watch these things. So we need to be aware of that and talk about it. And then the other side is that we can just be, all of us, you know, continually as parents, be oblivious to what our kids are doing and what's really happening. So there's a push there, a message there, you know, to be aware and ask lots of questions about this. So if you're listening and you think your kids have not watched it, ask, see if they have, and enter into a discussion a positive way, as Kara did, if in fact they have. So one of the things we talked about beforehand was some of the stuff that was pretty explicit in there. Obviously, the last episode, episode 13, the suicide. And Amy, just for people who didn't read the book, how was it that Hannah, how was the suicide mentioned or described in the book?
It was, you know, obviously it's not this graphic visual portrayal, but it was not presented at all in the same manner. And I felt like in the movie, it really was this climax of, you know, her decision, and obviously everything built towards that. But then the portrayal of it and the anguish.
Yeah. And the methodology was different too, from the book to the, yeah. So in the book, it was pills. And in the series, episode 13, she slits her wrists, just to be blunt. And I have to say that I cannot remember the last time I actually had to look away from the screen on a television show or a film. And I had to. It was that, to me, it was that gruesome and real and moving. And I think that's part of what a lot of the pushback is for the show. But let's talk about that. Jason, you want to say something?
No, I think that's exactly what we got to talk about, is because the question really is leading to, is it too gratuitous? Does it show too much, or does it show enough? Because I think that those are questions that we have to explore, because that's been a lot of the pushback has been around whether or not it showed too much.
Yeah.
And I vacillate between whether it did or didn't, but it was very real. And so I'm actually really curious what Kara and Amy think about what was seen, because in the book you've both mentioned that it was not as gratuitous, that it actually had maybe a different stream end with regards to the way that the characters and everything played out. But I'm just curious what your thoughts are when we're talking about that. Is it too gratuitous? Does it need to be shown?
Can I change your language there, Jason? Because
yeah,
I wouldn't say gratuitous. That's not the word I'd choose. I'd say graphic. You might think it's gratuitous, but I think we need to draw a distinction there, because gratuitous is, that's the stuff that's put in there to draw the viewing audience in, you know, gratuitous violence, gratuitous sex, as opposed to stuff that's graphic.
And that's where the vacillation happens, because I think there are moments of that. There is a moment in, I think, episode 10 or 11 when Jessica was having sex with Jordan, and it just kind of all of a sudden happened, and I felt like, whoa, like this, there's something that it also escalates, because it goes from episodes 1 through 9, and then all of a sudden 10, 11, and 12, and 13 even take on a whole nother life, which leads back to the original question that started this, the beginning of the podcast, or the beginning of this break, was asking Kara about her daughter, because I can see how 1 through 9, there's all these things that happen, then all of a sudden 10, 11, and 12, and even 13, that was where all of a sudden it was hard for me to watch. It was hard for me to – I mean, just because of some of the rawness of some of the conversations that have happened with other people, it was difficult. Just like you said, you had to turn away. So, I think that at times it might have been a little bit gratuitous.
Yeah.
And other times it was really graphic. So – I think that we need – I'd like to explore that. I see a lot of head shaking. Yeah.
I was wondering, as a teenager watches this, are they actually sort of balancing between hope that she doesn't do this and carry this out and the possibility that she might? I know I watched the series knowing the outcome. I wonder to what degree – they actually know the outcome as they progress through, because didn't this come out one show at a time over time?
No,
they actually dropped the whole thing right at the end of March. Yeah.
Okay. So I wonder how aware they were, or if they're kind of teetering with hopefulness that maybe she won't. And then ultimately
I did. I teetered on that, but as I've taught to students, I don't think that that many of them did. Kara, I don't know what the conversation's been in the high school.
No, I think they knew. I feel like the first episode kind of lets you know that. And I think talking about gratuitous or raw and what's appropriate, what's not appropriate, you know, we've come so far in what we think is appropriate for anybody of any age to see. And like the conversation with my daughter and with kids here is you can't unsee it. So whatever you've seen is now in your head. And if you see it 10 times, it's not as bad anymore. And, you know, from faith-based people that we are, I mean, that's just the lie that's being fed to us, that suddenly it's okay because you see it's in everything. You know, it's kind of like the F word. Well, it's not that bad. It's in everything now. It's just a desensitization that makes these things not as harmful. They don't feel as harmful to our kids. And that's the point where I think, yeah, there were some scenes that were too gratuitous, too heavily. Well, they were made to draw an audience, and it was not the parenting audience.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that when it comes to premarital sexual activity, the show left the impression that this is normal, that it's benign, that it's, you know, not a vice, that in fact it might be virtuous, that it's expected. This is what it means to be a teenager in today's world.
Jessica made the comment that you don't want me anymore, I'm not worth it to you, when she threw herself on him sexually.
Yeah.
That is a lie our kids believe. And that, I don't know, that to me is one, those little things in there that they slipped in, you know, it's too much. It's too much, and it's not, you know, and it's just a lie that is continually fed in what they watch.
Yeah.
And that happened in more than one episode with Jessica. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that there's no emotional side to a relationship. It's just there's a sexual aspect. That's it.
And if you don't have that, you have nothing. And Justin never said anything to the contrary.
No.
Now, on the flip side, there are a couple of scenes of sexual assault and rape, and they're horrifying. They're difficult to watch. It's uncomfortable. It's wrong, obviously. And I think that the show, the story, says that. So it differentiates between consensual sex. And I know, Jason, you talk about these things through Project 619 all the time. So it differentiates between consensual sex, which is okay as long as everybody agrees that it's okay, but that which is not consensual, that's assault. And I just need to be honest and say that there was one scene in particular with Hannah where this was happening where I thought the look on her face just told the whole truth about the ugliness of just of what's happening in our culture sexually with sexual assault. It was ugly truth. And I think that when you see that, that's where I would differentiate between the graphic and the gratuitous.
For sure.
And again, I wouldn't want my middle school kid watching that. At the same time, I agree with that. But at the same time, there was a value judgment made there that this is a vice. This is wrong. At least, and I would say that, at least there was a line drawn there. And in a world where our boys are being taught that females are objects to be conquered, to be used, to be manipulated, to satisfy yourself with, that's a message that really needs to be heard, because guys feel so entitled in that area. Do you folks agree with me on that, or did I misread that? Was there danger with the way I saw that?
I definitely agree, and I appreciate the fact that you also noticed there was this line drawn that assault is assault. I think there was a hunger and a desire portrayed for an innocent relationship in which a kiss means something, the touch of a hand, an initial affection means something, that innocence that I think early that was indicated that she wanted that, and maybe even some of the other female characters did. But then the confusing aspect is this overall presentation that is not what relationships are about, except for her hope that it might be like that with Clay, because he was presented as that character.
Can I throw in too that these kids don't watch this on Tuesday night at 8 o'clock? and then watch the next episode in a week. They watched 13 back to back.
Binge watch.
And I watched 4 in a row, and I was sick the whole day. You get into a show. I don't know how many we've all binged, right? You binge on something. We're binging on Prison Break right now, so I see shanks everywhere I go. Things I can use to shank people because you're like in the show, right? You're in it. You can cut that out.
Yeah.
But you know, I think there needs to be something said about binging. You know, when you binge a show, you are in it. You feel it. You're a part of it. And these kids don't get a break from it. They just go until it's done. And that's 13 hours of depressing, attacks, violence, sex, drugs, drinking, and suicide.
Yeah. Wow. And crappy friendships. Like,
yeah.
There's no loyalty. There's no trust. There's very little comfort level achieved with any of their friendships that they can feel good about them. They don't know who is actually an ally or an enemy.
That's powerful to think about, because I think that we talk about this a lot, the new culture of binging, but there's a difference between watching one or two episodes, which is what my wife and I did, because we needed time to digest, especially as the series went further and further. We could not watch those final 3 or 4 episodes all at once. We had to go one by one and really spend time thinking about it. But so often what you're saying is they digest and they haven't really thought about it. It just somehow becomes a part of the dialogue and conversation, and without ever being critical or thinking through what's been seen. And the difference for an adult is we've all said there are moments in the series that were really difficult.
Yeah.
And so, what?
There aren't even commercials to like stop and go get a drink. You know, there aren't even any commercials in it.
Right. Yeah. It also, and I don't know if anybody else experienced this or this was just me, that the going between the scenes, first of all, that you're hearing her voice after death, but also going between the scenes of reality and the flashbacks. I'm wondering about that, what an adolescent is left with, kind of like, well, I do have influence after a suicide or after the grave. It really isn't over. And that kind of, that lack of a bright boundary, if you will, between life and death that may have also been presented. Or they may be left with.
Yeah, and this is one of the concerns about, you know, how does it glorify suicide? Because, you know, for years and I remember 30 years ago talking about and hearing about clusters of suicide in the Philadelphia area when I was there, and how this would be almost contagious. And what people would say is kids who have no power, who have no attention, they see the attention, they see the power that someone who has completed a suicide now has in the student population. So the reasoning is, I'm going to take my life and then I'm going to have power. This actually ramps it way up to leave 13 tapes, to pull people into the story, to blame, to not take really any responsibility at all for herself, to not seek any sort of professional help except couple of conversations, I guess, with a guidance counselor, which I want to come back and talk about after the break, to get some impressions on that, because we need to process that. But I think that this, in that way, may actually serve to glorify things for kids who are vulnerable right now and thinking this way, and all they need is a trigger, if I may say it that way. I mean, what do you guys think about that?
I've seen the term revenge suicide used for the series. That she got her revenge on those 13 people. And so she got something out of it.
Yeah.
There also, I don't know if you realize this, but there's also some talk that there will be another season.
There is, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how far into the works that is, but I'm kind of like, where do you go?
It's the most popular series.
Yeah, well, we had that conversation here this morning. Kenton brought that up, and I said, you know, Kenton, I'm still like picking the glass out of my forehead from the car wreck of watching that last episode. Yet as he was mentioning clues to the second series or a second season, I thought, oh yeah, I wondered about all those things. Those were stones left unturned, and they really did open the door for that. So, you know, fully expect that that'll happen. And interestingly enough, you know, part of that is, and Kenton pointed this out, the possibility of some massive violence that occurs that we're getting set up for from that last the last episode. So I want to, here's what I want to do. I want to take a break, but when I come back, think about this. Before we get into talking about responses and how to have conversations and some other specific questions I have that I think would be helpful for parents and youth workers, when we come back, I want to ask you, any positives? Were any issues portrayed realistically and in a positive light that would allow us to spring off and have some conversations about where there really are some tough things happening in youth culture that we need to recognize and address? So stick with us. We'll be right back after the break to continue our discussion of 13 Reasons Why. Here at CPYU, we're taking steps to help parents, youth workers, educators, and anyone else who cares about kids help the kids they know and love navigate the difficult issues of life. We've put together a one-day training seminar called Tackling the Tough Stuff that we can bring to your community. Over the course of the day, Mark Penner and I will provide information and practical steps you can take to address narcissism, pornography, self-injury, depression, suicide, and a variety of other tough issues kids face in today's world. To learn more about bringing Tackling the Tough Stuff to your church or community, go to cpyu.org/toughstuff or call us at 1-800-807-CPYU. Once again, welcome back to this last segment of this episode of Youth Culture Matters. We're having a conversation with Jason Sochnick, Kara Twining, and Amy Flavin about the Netflix series, highly popular, 13 Reasons Why. And I know one of the articles that's been circulating around the internet this week is one that comes from a woman who is a mother and a psychotherapist. What is her name? I've got to find her name here. Brooke Fox. That may be the one that you were talking about, Amy. Brooke has written an article called 13 Reasons Why and Its Unintended Consequences. Now, I'm just going to read them. She says it's irresponsible and disturbing. Here is why. She put it into bullet points. She says, number one, nobody else is responsible for our mental health. So she's saying, you know, Hannah shouldn't have blamed everybody else. Secondly, she says 13 Reasons Why is a suicide revenge fantasy. It goes back, Kara, to what you were saying. Number three, mental health issues and the help that's available are barely discussed, and that's accurate. Number four, girls are depicted as disempowered. Number five, the suicide scene is cause for outrage. And number six, 13 Reasons Why glamorizes suicide. And these are some of the concerns that we've already talked about and some that we have. I do want, before we go on to talking about should people watch it, for those of us who did, who are having this conversation, or was there anything positive that you saw? Anything at all? And maybe the silence is the answer.
I do think that there's a lot of honesty in it as far as perspective from the teenage world. It's uncomfortable as an adult to watch this series. I think that's probably accurate too. And part of that is because some of this is real. You can't discount that kids talk to each other that way. Kids go to parties like this. Kids have these feelings, irrational in our mind thoughts, you know? I think that might be good. And, you know, Clay comes out okay, I guess.
I agree.
relatively speaking, yeah. Yeah.
I agree that the portrayal of how the adolescents reacted to one another was accurate. The misunderstandings that result, the perspective of someone being very, very powerful and then being unable to see the perspective of someone else and those kinds of things and being very easily wounded by something that the other person didn't intend to you know, be hurtful. And so I think, like you said, Kara, I think there's a lot of honesty in those kinds of reactions. And I think some of the adults watching it, parents, teachers, and so on, well, teachers see it, but parents may not need to be reminded that that is how adolescents react, that they take to heart something that was not meant to be, you know, that heartfelt or that hurtful, and that may become the platform for another decision down the road and so on. I also think a positive is that it is evoking the conversations. It's making people talk about it.
I think it's what's hard is to grab as many things as we've talked about so far in the positive category to say, well, there is this theme, there is this thing, there is these I think there's moments that we can capture. So I think overall we could say some of the honesty, the depiction of adolescence, the way things happened. I agree with what Kara was saying. It is one of the more real portrayals I've seen on the screen in a very long time. And Walt, you and I have talked about this off air, but there is one moment that just stood out to me. Clay's parents, there are moments where I really disagreed with some of the things that might have been happening, but there was the one moment where he'd been out late and he comes back in, and instead of ripping into him, his dad just gives him a hug. And I think that there are moments in the series where you can point to and say, wow, that was a powerful moment for me, having had so many other conversations. I don't have older kids. I translate the culture so often. But that was a powerful moment because I've heard so many other parents speak about that one moment on screen that they saw, and it was a teaching moment. It was something that they were able to look at. It doesn't mean that they just let Clay continue to get away with stuff, but there was that moment where there was that hug just spoke so much more than any other words could have.
Mm. Yeah, I thought. Oh, go ahead, Amy.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, in terms of a positive, you know, with our Digital Kids Initiative here, most parents are oblivious to the role that social media plays in kids' lives, how it's shaping or misshaping them, how it's changing the nature of how they relate. And I think that this offers a window into the role of social media, incomplete, albeit, I get that, but especially at the level of how things go viral and then also cyberbullying. Which is just so totally different than the bullying that those of us who are older experienced when we were students ourselves. You can't get away from it. And it extends as far as digital media goes. And so I think, you know, that was one that jumped out at me, one among many, but one of the things that I think was helpful. You want to say something, Amy?
It doesn't relate to that.
Okay.
Well, I can add to that, back to Clay's parents. There was one scene, and I want to say it's in episode 10, where his mom confronts him in a parking lot, and he's not going to tell her what's going on. And I love this example where she says, I'm your mother, and I'm going to find out. And then she walked away from him. And I felt like too often the adults were just background, and they kind of bounced off the main characters. And at that point, I mean, that's what I would recommend parents to do, is remember who you are and who that child is to you. And she did that well. And the response was well, too, where Clay says, okay, I knew Hannah Baker.
Yeah. Interestingly, my point relates a little bit to that. And that is that I felt like they portrayed two intact families, intact marriages, trying to support each other. Trying to love each other, you know, some arguments and some loud words sometimes, but Clay's parents were trying to support one another, and I felt like Hannah's parents were, which I thought was interesting. There were other, you know, obviously some other broken relationships and so on, but they were trying, you know. They were, you know, the scene where the father brought her flowers, you know, and you know, there was that desire to say, I still, in the midst of all this, I still love you.
Well, let me ask you, let's ask the big question here. Start to get real practical. Should parents and youth workers watch 13 Reasons Why? Now, I'm guessing that most who are listening in have already watched it. That's why they're listening in. But should parents and youth workers watch 13 Reasons Why? That's the big question. Who wants to start with that one?
Well, I sat in my counseling meeting today with eight of us, counselors and social workers, and we were all debriefing the recent loss in our building from, we lost a student last week to suicide. And it was very easy to say to those people that you need to watch this because we're working with these kids that are watching it. But it's also, you don't want to, I don't want to promote it,
yeah.
But it's their language. And if you really want to know what they're thinking and feeling and what they're watching and what they're seeing, I don't know any other way to do it.
Yeah. And I think, Kara, the promotion piece of it is just watching it doesn't, to say I viewed this doesn't mean you're promoting it. It's the way that we process it and respond to it that will either put a stamp of approval on it and say, yeah, just go ahead and watch it. It's entertaining. Or it becomes a teachable moment. Amy, what do you think? You're a counselor.
Yeah, I really feel like I feel like parents and teenagers need to see this. If a teenager says, Mom, Dad, I don't want to watch this, then hey, that's okay. But I think then it's an opportunity to also say to them, great, if you don't want to watch that and don't want those pictures in your head, I totally support you. But I do want you to know that ultimately the message is that suicide is not, it is not an option. It's not a successful method to solve your problems. There is always another option. Because even if a child doesn't want to watch it, and I think they should be let off the hook if they don't want to watch it, you would want them to know that core truth to come out the other side, to be able to say, there is always something else you can do besides suicide. So in that regard, I think that the message has to come through.
Yeah.
If a kid wants to watch it, I think the message personally should be, if we don't watch it together, I at least want to talk about it with you.
If I had to go back, I would not have allowed my 14-year-old daughter to watch it.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't let, if mine was 14 right now, I would have said absolutely not.
Right. So I think when we're talking about having kids watch it, you know, there's definitely an age appropriateness in it.
Yeah.
I agree.
Jason, you have a thought on this?
Well, yeah, I just have, in the last month in the churches that we've been in, these are churches, schools, I think Kara has captured the picture quite clearly, but even in the church with middle schoolers and high schoolers, I am hearing a lot of conversation around this. And for all the reasons we've said, I go back and forth, but I have said to parents, as we have a parent meeting tonight, for instance, and I have said to them, I think it's really important for you to watch this, not because I approve of everything in the show, but because it depicts adolescence, it depicts the world your son and daughter lives in, and whether your son or daughter is watching it, their friends are watching it, and they're conversating about it, and they're, for all the other reasons, it's why CPYU exists. And so it's that dynamic of having good conversation and being aware of what is happening. And for that simple reason, I think it's something that we need to engage critically and dive into conversation around it. I don't know if I'm one that would go as far as saying having teens watch it, but they're watching it. And so I think then it's really important for youth pastors, and parents and teachers to watch this show, because I think it's going to help with an understanding. It's probably going to reinforce. Maybe it will also, for me, there are moments that were really it caused my heart to palpitate, because it reminded me very clearly of what it meant to be an adolescent. I almost transferred from the time I was watching that show to the time I was in the high school. And it just, there's very few things in life that transport you back. There are smells, there are instances, but this was a show that I felt on moments where I actually had to pause it and think, oh my gosh, like it just reminds you of so much, because it's so raw and so real. And so I think for some of those reasons, I think it is important to be able to at least engage with this material so that you have an understanding of what people are talking about, specifically teens.
Yeah, I would affirm everything that everyone said. I do think it's important, and I think if they are watching it, we need to process it. We've got to remember where they're at developmentally. They're lacking in wisdom. They're lacking in experience. Certainly for our Christian students, they don't have the spiritual depth and vitality that I hope we as adults, as youth workers and parents would have, and to be able to step in and direct them to where the gospel speaks to these issues and to give them gospel hope, which many recognize very clearly was not present in that show. That was the one thing when I listed the issues that I said, it's just not there. And really, not only that, the adults aren't there. So I do think we need to be talking about it and use it as a springboard for discussions to bring the light of God's word to bear on the realities that exist. And I'll go back to a question that was asked, a question that that Amy brought up, and that was, you know, talking to a student saying, hey, where do you see yourself in this? I think to use that as a diagnostic tool to get into the heart, get into the mind, get into the reality of kids. You know, sometimes kids can't put things into words. We can't do that as adults many times. Music, media, is the arts, they're effective at doing that. And so to allow this show to speak for the kids that we know and love and to get a window into what they're dealing with allows us to deal with what they're dealing with in gospel-centered ways. So I think that's a good way, to do that as well. Any other thoughts on, you know, how to watch this? You know, okay, we should watch it. You know, adults should watch it, be aware of it. How do we watch it? Any thoughts on that? I've given my opinion on that. I wonder if the rest of you have any ideas on how we should watch it with them. I know there's some great online tools out there. Maybe we'll put some links up to some of those that are out there, some of the discussion guides that have come up.
I'd be surprised at this point if a parent or a youth worker could actually watch this through with the kid before they've seen it.
Yeah.
I think we're behind the eight ball on it now.
Yeah, that's the reality. That's the reality. Yeah. Would it be good for a youth worker to, with parental permission, you know, here's what I would do if I'm in youth ministry. I would have a parent meeting, and I would get all the parents who are behind the eight ball in the room, and I would, at the very least, offer an overview and a summary. I would talk about the plot. I would talk about how it starts, how it ends. I would talk about the fact that kids are watching, and I might survey my students beforehand anonymously and ask them how many have seen it. Break that down by grade level, make them aware of it, and then perhaps with their permission, any of the students, you know, who have seen it, come together and have a discussion with a youth pastor, maybe even draw the parents in to have some sort of give and take. You know, Jason and I do this thing, we call it, you know, jumpstart. So jumpstart the conversation so that, you know, people at least feel discomfort, can you break the ice for them, and they're now able to talk student to parent, parent to student. That's what I would do with it if I was a youth worker. That may not be the best way to go about it, but that's what comes to mind right now as we're talking about it. And maybe you folks have some ideas about how to make that happen as well.
I like that idea. I also think, again, part of what's presented in the movie is a very significant divide between the world of the parents and the world of the students, and them not accessing any parental power or strength or wisdom that might have lent itself to helping this situation. And the presentation of the single helping professional, the school counselor, was not terribly effective, or the expectation of what he could or could not do was not realistic. And so, what does the student walk away with in terms of how can they resolve a situation like this? And I think that's part of what students need to hear. They need to hear there are other ways of dealing with issues. There's ways of dealing with bullying or being ostracized. And how do we teach our students to be better at supporting one another and not creating those situations or being part of those situations?
And to invite parents into those conversations, if we do that as a youth worker, that builds bridges to make that happen and breaks down that large divide that existed in the show. You mentioned the guidance counselor, Mr. Porter. I want to go to Kara to ask her a question. You know, because I, you know, as I watch this, I'm thinking, okay, we've got an adult here now, and I'm processing his conversation with Hen. I'm trying to figure out in that scene, and everybody knows what I'm talking about if they've watched it, what is she trying to pull off here? Why is he responding the way he is responding? As a counselor, Kara, what did he do right? What did he do wrong?
Well, you know, I went in, I hadn't seen that episode before I had heard somebody say, boy, that counselor really screwed it up. So, and I remember in the book, the conversation in the book is much shorter, and she doesn't give him anything to go off of. And for me as a counselor reading that, I thought, oh, wow, I mean, that would be horrible to know that a kid was in that much pain and, you know, didn't even let you know at all. The one in the show, honestly, I kept looking for, I think every school counselor would like to tell you that that would go differently. But I felt like it was an honest depiction of a school counseling office. And that's sad. And, you know, again, me and my friends, you know, we'll say, yeah, well, when she said this, you know, you probably would have said this. Well, yeah, maybe, unless I have just been out of, you know, I just came out of a classroom teaching a career unit, and I just had 14 kids come in for schedule changes, and my phone is beeping because I have 4 messages I have to get to before 2 o'clock when I'm going down the hall to see another kid. I don't know. You know, that I think what Jason talked about earlier, the pressures on school staff to be the all end all for kids' needs in the 6.5 hours we have them is too much. And I loved when the principals walked into the bathroom and saw what was written on the walls and gasped. That's very real. I asked people at the lunchroom the other day, how many of you have been in the student bathrooms? And everybody's like, gross, why would I go in there? Unfortunately, I think what you saw from school, as appalling as it is a middle road, honest depiction.
Interesting, yeah. And frightening at the same time. And I was sitting there thinking as I watched Mr. Porter, this guy's got all kinds of legal things that he's got to navigate as well. And I was wondering exactly what those were and how to do that. I want to read something that Susie Brahms put up, and this was in response to our question on Facebook about, you know, comments on 13 Reasons Why or any questions you had. She wrote this. She's a youth worker in the Pittsburgh area. Susie said, I read the book many years ago with students. They were reading already, and I caught up. I thought that's great. That's a good youth worker right there. You know, that's where my kids are. I'm going to go there. We had some amazing discussions, and it really helped open the door to difficult discussions. I've watched the show in a matter of 3 days. I was blown away again by how serious these issues are for students, how oftentimes they feel so alone, and how we have the chance to speak God's truth into each of these reasons. It was really good. She also said, I'll also add that this is an important series as a youth worker to pass on to parents. I've had great discussions based on talking about the show. So, yeah, youth workers use it as a tool. Let me ask one more question before we go out. We're going to post. We're going to brainstorm here after we get off on some resources that we can post on this. I think we have some past podcasts that we can link people to for help, and then some books and things. But I want to ask Kara and Amy if you could succinctly give us, as parents and as youth workers, what are the steps we need to take in a moment of crisis or a moment of suspicion where we suspect that we've got a Hannah Baker, someone who's pondering taking their own life? How do we respond and not let them fall through the cracks? Anybody want to take that one?
The first thing that came to mind, and this is as a professional counselor, and it's also what I tell students and adults, is that if you suspect an individual is suicidal, don't hesitate to use the word. Don't use euphemisms. You want to make sure that you know what they're thinking about and talking about. The fear is always that if we say the word suicide, it's going to put the thought in their head. It's not. If it's there, it's there already. So I think we need to be clear about that and ask that question of a person? Are you suicidal? And then you do not want to be the only person who knows that.
Mm-hmm.
I say that to kids. If you have a friend who's confided in you, you absolutely do not want to be the only person who knows that. Talk to an adult. Make sure you tell somebody else. As a professional counselor, that is the boundary, or the, you know, my confidentiality is allowed to be broken at that point, because their welfare and well-being is what's at stake. So you want to make sure you ask the question, but you also want to make sure that you then are willing to take the step to reach out to additional professionals who will be able to make sure that that person is safe. Might be parents, might be emergency room, might be a mobile mental health unit that can come and do assessments and stay with that person until you've got someone inside of you.
And ask, do you have a plan? Do you have a plan? Because if they have a plan and a method, they've done a lot of thinking about it, and they're at a point where it's pretty doggone serious. So, Kara, anything you want to add to that?
No, I agree with everything Amy said, and I think it's really important that you're not alone in it. I think it's important to know, I had a professor tell me once that my words are not that powerful, which freed me to know that I can't screw it up. So I can have an open, honest conversation with a kiddo that's saying that and talking about that and use the words I'm most comfortable with. And I can't screw it up with my words because I don't have that much power. But I also don't want to be alone, because that gives me the feeling of too much responsibility. So reaching out to whoever it is. In our case, you know, at school, we immediately contact parents. If I'm a youth worker, you know, I think I would contact the parents. I'd really recommend that you always contact a guardian immediately. And you don't leave that kid till a guardian has made contact with the kid, period.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. We'll post some things from our buddies, Rich Van Pelt and Marv Penner. They've done some great work on this and given us some great advice. So we're going to dig into our archives here and put some of that up for you. Jason, why don't you go ahead, final words, take us out, close this out for us. You're ready to say something.
Well, I was just going to say that we have to remember, as youth workers, specifically in the work that we do with Project 619, we're mandatory reporters. It's not uncommon for us to hear about abuse and rape. And the thing that our speakers are reminded of is they have to report this. So again, they're not alone, but I think that sometimes we can forget of some of the even legalities around some of these things that are happening. And I think that it helps. It's there for the protection of the child. It's also there for the protection of ourselves. And so I think that these are really important things to remember in the midst of this. And I'll also, just before we close, just say one last thing with regards to what we can do with this material. It's just using the 3 D's. I think that when a community can come together, much like you were talking about, Walt, and what Amy and Kara already spoke about, the discover, discern, decide in the midst of this, and helping parents be able to do the same thing, and youth workers to engage in these conversations with their students, can be a really powerful tool. And
Can I throw something in here? And I know I turned it over you, Dan, but I had made a note to myself here that I wanted to say this before we ended, and that is, there was a poignant moment in there. I went back and watched the episode again and wrote down what Hannah said. There was a point where in her narration she said this: there's so much wrong in the world. There's so much hurt. I couldn't take knowing I'd make it worse, and I couldn't take knowing it would never get any better. And I think that's what stuck with me, because the hopelessness there in that statement just seemed so incredibly deep and dark. And that was a moment where it really dawned on me that there throughout this whole thing, there's been no mention, not just of the hope of the gospel, but really any kind of hope. And I think as followers of Jesus, we understand why Jesus came and the burdens that Jesus can carry for us. That doesn't mean, I mean, life is hard. And this is where I think to teach our students this theology of suffering is so important, that Christ carries our burdens, walks us through this. And this is actually, these difficult things are where he refines us. He does his best work in us at that moment. So I just thought I'd throw that in before you finish out.
Well, I think that's a great place for us to finish this podcast. So thank you for listening. We will do our we will be listing resources on the resource page that we may have mentioned here in the podcast, but also some that we may not have. So thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you next time on the next Youth Culture Matters.
Thanks for joining us for Youth Culture Matters, a podcast from the Center for Parent-Youth Understanding. If you'd like to learn more about today's youth culture, visit our website at cpyu.org. And if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, email us at podcast@cpyu.org.